timber rattlesnakes, big floods, and women park rangers. What do all of these things have in common? Give up? You can find them all at Whitewater State Park in Minnesota. Like all of our 75 state parks in Minnesota, Whitewater State Park has a very rich history. Stick around for our podcast to learn more about this special place. Hello, I'm Sarah Holger, an interpretive naturalist at Whitewater State Park. Since 1919, Whitewater State Park has been providing exceptional outdoor experiences for families, youngsters, and people of all ages. During the summer of 2017, I, along with a team of volunteers, gathered stories from park visitors and local residents about their memories of this special place. The stories we collected have been woven together to create this podcast series. I invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to this edition of Whitewater Stories. During its 100 years serving the community, Whitewater State Park has employed hundreds of men, women, and young adults. Throughout the years, employees have dedicated countless hours caring for the spectacular natural resources and ensuring visitors' safety and enjoyment of the diverse outdoor opportunities offered at the park. In 1979, parks worker Joe Rice was involved in a major undertaking to build the stone path and steps that lead several hundred feet up the bluff to Chimney Rock.
I think the first couple years, tried different stuff, ramps with wheelbarrows, did that for a while, and then we took a little tractor up. Until that worked, until the tractor went over the edge. We'd carry rocks. And eventually, after we got through with the equipment, we just went back to Egyptian style. We just carried it by hand.
Oh, my God.
We'd carry rocks the first couple hours before lunch. Then we would mix cement and carry that up. And after lunch, we would lay the rock in. And then after the afternoon break, we would carry everything down and clean up. Because I know George and I finished at the last. And that last stretch of steps where it wise off to inspiration and that, you did one step a day, you know, which was actually pretty good for that tall up, because, I mean, talk about great exercise, carrying a rock up Chimney Rockers.
Ken Heiser, who was a seasonal building and grounds worker at the time, worked with Joe and a handful of other seasonal staff on building the Chimney Rock Trail.
We had this old Ford dump truck that was I would say probably early 60s. Well, this truck was, and this was in the 70s, late 70s, and it had, the back window was broke out on it, and half stuff didn't work. There was holes rusted right through the floor on it, and it was an old six-speed split shift thing on it, and it just roared. And we'd take it down to the, drive it from the park down to Bison Stone Quarter. We got permission to get the stone there, their scrap stone. So we'd go down there with mauls and break up the sheets into smaller pieces until the truck was loaded. Three of us, you know, and then bring it back. So it'd take about half a day trip, dump it, and hopefully go back, you know, and get, if we could make two trips a day, that was doing pretty good. Well, one day the way station was open. They were doing a safety check and pulled the truck in. And the highway patrolman just looked and said, just park it over there. Okay, so pulled it over to the side. He came over, and there was, I think it was 12 or 13 violations on the truck. And he says, I tell you what, boys, he says, I'm going to let you drive this thing back to Whitewater. He says, I never want to see it on the road again. And we did. We got it back to the park, and then they came with a flatbed and loaded up and hauled it away. But yeah, that poor old dump truck, the seat, just a flat, hard, flat seat. No, of course, no seat belts, no nothing. You're just bouncing along in the thing, you know. You can look down through the holes in the floor and see the highway go underneath you. And it's great to go back there and hike up it and see very little of it has been hurt by nature, let's say, you know, frost pushing anything out or any stuff like that. A few loose stones here and there, but otherwise, it basically, it's as sound as when we got done with it, you know, 30-some years ago.
Employees not only built trails in the park, they also maintained facilities, including the beach and former golf course. They developed naturalist programs and activities. They provided information to visitors, and they interacted with wildlife in the park. Each year, one or two of the 350,000 annual visitors to Whitewater State Park experiences a rare encounter with a timber rattlesnake. Since arriving at the park in 1995, Night Security Ranger Gene McGarry has had to assist with occasional rattlesnake encounters along the rugged park trails.
when I first started working here, and it was even before I had the core position, Dave and I transplanted 8 rattlesnakes. Barney Oldfield came to, you know, check it out. He was amazed that we had that many. And 2 of them were doing this mating dance and literally bah, 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 shaking the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And Barney Oldfield had told us, he said, well, that's one of the rarest things that you just saw because people don't get to see that very often, you know, rattlesnakes mating. So Dave and I transplanted them, you know, over into the past Trout Run in that area. And it was really cool because I remember when we, you know, let them all out, they were all kind of looking at us.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and, you know, we had marked the rattles, and, you know, 3 times somebody had reported them, and I had to go get them. Yeah, that was always a good thing. You know.
Is that a little scary when it's a wild one? You don't really know how it's going to react?
The first time I did it, this one was in the bush. Like, when I went to get it, it started going into the bramble, so it was really kind of, I was like, it was hard to get, and I kept pulling him out, and he was getting madder and madder, you know. So I was getting a little nervous because he was a pretty good size one. And, yeah, I finally got him in the bucket. But, yeah, that was the first time I ever really caught one like that. And I was really, yeah, nervous and excited.
Doug Case is another former Whitewater employee who, as part of his responsibilities as a lifeguard and seasonal parks worker for a handful of years beginning in 1959, was to go clear snakes from public areas, such as the woodpile that was located near the far end of the old golf course.
But if I came in early some mornings, I was to drive through the campground slowly and look for snakes that were sunning themselves on the picnic tables.
And then you had to move them all?
And move them off, yes, yes.
So what did you use to move them? Big stick or something?
Big stick, yeah, and hope that they were gone for the rest of the day.
Funny.
Before the campers woke up.
Were they ever rattlesnakes?
No, I don't think so. I think they were probably bull snakes or...
fox snakes.
Fox snake, yeah.
Do you ever remember seeing any rattlesnakes when you worked here?
We did. In fact, we killed one.
Did you?
And we sent it to the History Museum in Minnesota.
The Bell Museum.
I think it's still up there.
Okay.
Yeah, it was one of the largest that they had, or longest that they had seen. I don't know how large it was.
I'll have to check on that, see if they still have it.
And it was killed with a bow and arrow.
Oh, wow, really?
One of the lifeguards had a bow and arrow.
Oh, my goodness.
So we shot it and got rid of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Cleared the beach, I'll tell you.
I can imagine. Historically, parks and natural resource professions have been largely dominated by men. In the 1990s, affirmative action policies combined with science education outreach programs targeting girls helped to even the playing field by encouraging more women to pursue conservation careers. Today, many women, like Lee Reagan, hold park management and security ranger positions at parks across Minnesota and throughout the country. Lee describes her role as a night security ranger as
customer service specialist.
One of the biggest challenges for Lee, who has been working to enforce the rules at Whitewater State Park since 2013, is to help visitors understand why the rules exist, why they matter. Lee has developed her own special approach to communicating with park visitors about the rules. She tells visitors,
this is your tax money. I mean, if you destroy the resources here, you're basically like allowing somebody to destroy your front lawn. Try to relate to them on a personal level, just, you know, to take better care of their park.
Ensuring visitors' safe and enjoyable experiences is a primary focus of the park staff. But maintaining visitor safety can be quite complex with the park's steep and sometimes icy hiking trails, constant vehicle traffic, and fast-moving water. Nothing is potentially as dangerous as the constant threat of flooding. Over the past 100 years, Whitewater State Park has experienced many floods. The most destructive flood in the park's history occurred on August 19th, 2007. Gene McGarry was working that night.
Fortunately, all those other little floods that we've had set me up for, you know, that one in 2007. It was one of the weird experiences because we had Wild Blue that connected the satellite to the computer, which didn't work when it was raining or cloudy. We had no idea really the magnitude of what was coming our way. It was a steady rain and it lasted for about 13 hours, I believe. But at that point when you're, you know, in the moment, you don't really think about it until it was probably around 6:30, 7 o'clock at night when it started going over the low water crossing, which was very common. That happened a lot when we had heavy rains. But that night, we noticed at one point around 8 o'clock, mud was starting to slide down the bluff, you know, and I was like, this is not good. But we weren't hearing any reports. And at that point, we weren't, you know, like the evacuation thing, I wasn't really thinking so much about that. But, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, like the group camp, there was only one way out of there. The water was coming up, but not of any big concern at that point because things were flowing pretty well still. As we got around towards 9, 10 o'clock, we had to figure out that something was going to happen because it was raising up. Noah called us and LaCrosse and said that there's a flood warning. Well, when we get a flood warning, then that usually means we have to at least let people know that they're going to have to evacuate on a moment's notice. So we went back there to the group camp because that was the biggest concern. And they all were partying and having a good time. Went by the bridge to look to see how high the water was, and it was about 3 feet of clearance. So, you know, I wasn't too worried yet. And then I told them, I said that they're going to have to probably evacuate and that we'll be back probably around a half hour to see where they're at and, you know, give you the official call. And they're like, oh, we're not, you know, they didn't care. So when we went back again, we're like, yes, you're going to have to evacuate. So if you can, just pack up some stuff and, you know, let's get going. So then the last time, which was right around 10 o'clock, we're like, you guys, you do have to get out of here. And as I went over the stream, it had come up quite a bit. 5 minutes later, when I came back, it came up 2 feet. I mean, it just was really fast. So it was like, oh my God, I just turned right around. I used some expletives and I was just like, get out of here. We were pushing people out and everything. And they did. They responded and they got out, but they left a lot of stuff. It was at that point, you know, yeah. You just didn't know, you know, because it was really, it just got high. So we got out of there. And sure enough, what it was about 15 minutes later, it hit the Lazy D, put campers up in the trees and stuff. We were out. I knocked on somebody's truck because they were sitting there, and I was like, you gotta go. We wanted everybody to leave at that point. Person just staring off in the space saying, no, I'm gonna stay. And I was knee deep in water. By the time I got into Rochester, I looked over to the left where 14 is, over near the university, and they had that all blocked off and it was like underwater. What happened there in that flood is like a bunch of scars. I look at it as, it's part of the history, you know, and it's still here, you know, and the fishing was great after that. I mean, it didn't really ruin much.
Whitewater's history is intertwined with more than just Minnesota's past. As part of the nation's recovery from the Great Depression, Whitewater played a role in housing work camps for both the Civilian Conservation Corps and later the Works Progress Administration, better known as the CCC and the WPA. The same camp was later used as a prisoner of war camp during the Second World War, where more than 350 German soldiers spent time during the summers of 1944 and 1945. Joe Rice recalls meeting a former German prisoner of war who spent time at Whitewater.
I think it was 2000 when I was working behind the counter. I had a POW come.
Oh, really?
And talk to me. The ones that had been here, and that was pretty cool. That's probably not going to happen anymore.
No, yeah.
He had a great story. It was so cool. He was a young boy in Germany, and it was towards the end of the war, and they were grabbing everybody to fight, and they took him, made him fight, and he got captured. They put him on a ship, a POW ship. He said they fed him bread and water, and they sent him over here, put him in the camp with all these other Germans who had been here, some of them for a couple of years, and they asked him how the war was going, and he said that they were losing, so they immediately got mad at him and shunned him and figured he was lying, and, you know, this poor kid. What an experience.
Since the park's beginning, Whitewater employees have been extremely proud of their work. A popular story shared at the park tells of two former CCC boys, Fred Johnson and James Bishop, who returned to the park in the 1990s to assist with special programming to recognize the important role the CCC played in building the park. The men were emotionally moved and became teary-eyed as they observed modern families picnicking and bonding together in facilities they helped build so long ago when they were very young men. It's no surprise why Whitewater State Park employees today and yesterday take great pride in their park. Again, Gene McGarry.
To me, like the things that happened in my life that happened here, character builders. You know, I think this place is better than it ever was. And I feel like I'm better than I ever was, just in some ways. You know, they say once you go through hell, you keep going. I mean, it's that type of thing. And what a great place. This is an amazing place. You've got to think about all the spirits and history that have been here. That's still here. There's that essence here. In my own life, I'm proud to be here for 20 years because I know that I'm shared and part of this history here. I have to be here, which is kind of a neat feeling. You know, it's not like it's just a job. It's like part of your life. There was a reason you got the job here and the reason, you know, you stay. And I'd say in the last 5 years, this has been one of the most wonderful places for me. I've enjoyed it. They do burns and we don't have hardly any buckthorn compared to a lot of places. Just the whole management of this park, I'm proud of it.
Thank you for joining me for this edition of Whitewater Stories. From all of the staff at Whitewater State Park, we hope to see you in the park.